questions for our experts here. Once again, Kath, Arthur, and who hasn't been here was Anne so far, and Jonathan. And if you quickly introduce yourself, and then we can go for questions.
I'm Ethan. I'm now doing freelance work, doing web accessibility consultancy and some accessible development stuff. But in a past life, I was a web accessibility consultant for RNIB. And even further back, I did web design with a very big focus on accessibility, because I have a disability myself, although for the most part it's not visible. Other members of my family have disabilities, particularly in the built environment and with mobility problems. So I found it really quite offensive to be sitting in an office with my crutches propped up in the corner, and my boss telling me that I shouldn't bother making websites accessible for blind people, because why would blind people want to go on holiday to Airbnb in Scotland, because you know they can't see the scenery. So that's kind of my background and where I come from. So I've always been focused on accessibility, but at the same time I'm quite a visual person, and I really firmly believe that accessibility can be done well and accessibility can be sexy. And like Denise said this morning, you know, just because you've got a disability, why does that mean you want everything that's around you to be really, really ugly and not particularly appealing visually, even though it might be functional? So yeah, that's my background.
Good. Any questions? Denise, up here. Sorry about that.
Hello. It's kind of, it's not so much a question about technology, but more a question about the language used to describe the technology. Because there's obviously all these fantastic things happening out there. I'm just a little bit concerned sometimes how this sort of technology might be promoted to different people and how it's kind of explained to people. Say, like the person who was speaking about dyslexia earlier, some of the barriers you were speaking about were very similar to the ones that I experienced due to fatigue. I find it hard to concentrate. Quite often I have to read a sentence more than once just because I haven't processed the information because I'm tired, etc, etc. But I'm just a bit concerned in terms of if something's promoted as for people with learning disabilities, that maybe you might be missing out on people who could possibly use that tool and find it really useful. So it's just kind of what sort of language and how are you going to promote it and let people know about it. I suppose the other thing is, sorry, is that people might not necessarily think of themselves as having a disability, but they might actually find these tools really useful. So how do you tell people about them?
Great. So when we were, as I say, the tools for doing all this preference stuff, the discussions that we had around what a call that, what the link for that would be, they've just never finished, really. They're just keeping on going. And we don't know. We didn't want to say disability options, because we knew that a lot of people who would benefit from them wouldn't consider themselves disabled. We thought that accessibility was not a bad word, but again, most people, when they look at accessibility, still see disability. And also, just a really strange thing, we do our site in Welsh as well, and there is no Welsh word for accessibility. So we actually couldn't use that word either. We call them display options, but they're not just for displays. So you get to a point where you think, well, okay, how do we get this to the right person? That's why we did the research that we did. The only thing we know now is that it's even harder than we thought. If we can, you know, it's awful. It really is dreadful to have a report in front of you saying, one guy said, if all of the web was like this, I would use it. And that was after having done the customizations. And the same person, when was asked, would he want to customise his computer at the start, said no. So I'm not quite sure. So in some ways I want to agree, in other ways I don't want to agree, because actually I think language isn't going to help us. We can't find, there is no magic bullet, we can't find the right word that is going to bring the right people to it. I think it comes down to education, really, and it comes down to saying, expect more, because a lot of people just see what they get and they have a bad experience. As I say, a lot of the stuff we've been looking at recently has been about whether people actually want to use computers at all. Actually, if we did it perfect, would they come? And actually, you know, a lot of the time that's not the case either. You know, a lot of people who are visually impaired are quite old. And actually, if you look at the stats and the research from places like Victor, that's sitting on my desk, a lot of them say, I just wouldn't want to use it. Sometimes it's... there is no magic bullet. I think all we can do is to get good examples of stuff out there, really, and to sort of, you know, to say, here is somebody like you who is having a great time using whatever. It's good stories, which is why we have case studies on My Way, just so that people can see someone like them actually enjoying this thing called the internet. Sorry, it's long rambling. Anyone else?
I actually like the German term for it. It's called Barrierefreiheit, which means barrier-free websites.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot more sense than me coming up with a word that nobody understands.
Wiederholen? Yeah. Sorry, what is it again?
Barrierefreiheit.
Sprechen? What is it?
Barrierefreiheit.
Barrierefreiheit.
Yeah, it's not a beautiful language, but it's very to the point.
Just on the point of how do you get to the people that aren't using the stuff, I think that very much education is going to be the key, but I think that unfortunately a lot of the time people who know about it tend to wind up preaching to the choir. So they talk about this stuff to people who already know about it or who are already there, and tragically there's this, and it's a horrible phrase, but there's this huge sort of cold market of people who just don't know what they can do. And I think that maybe one thing that could happen is for people who know about this stuff and who are enthusiastic about it and who are prepared to help people join this wonderful community and you know, be able to participate, is to go to perhaps organisations for that particular disability and say, you know, if you're not on the internet at the moment, you know, talk to people, find out what their problems are with it, and say, are there ways that I can help you get around it? Did you know about this particular product? Did you know that you can do this? And you know, did you know that you can change the text size, you know, on your computer? And you know, I'll come around and if you want me to, and I'll set it up on your computer so that you can then get access to stuff that you might not have had access to before. It's not always a technology solution, as Christian said very first thing this morning. It's not always the technology solution that's the right solution. It might be the people solution. It might just need people to go out and talk to people and try and help them in any way that they can. How that would happen, I have absolutely no idea, but it's a way of thinking about it.
Got a question over there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really big challenge, isn't it? You know, I mean, when you think about, like, My Web, My Way, like, it's like the tip of the iceberg, really, in terms of the information you need to deliver to people. I mean, I'd certainly, everything I've kind of, like, listen to today, I'm going to take back to the team at AbilityNet, because I think there's a broader discussion about what we can do. I mean, the things that were going through my head as well is that I think we almost need to take a step back from what we're doing as well, and maybe go and do some research with users and find out, like, what would work. You know, we kind of started doing it, but I almost feel like we need to do more. And then whatever solutions we come up with, do you remember, Christian, when you showed the video of the Wii at Accessibility 2.0, and there's this fantastic clip of older people just like picking up this technology and using it immediately, and it's almost like we need to develop the tool that works as simply as the Wii, because the Wii doesn't work with written language, it just works with symbols mainly, and I think that'd really work. I'd also think that it'd be really good to kind of all get behind the RNIB toolbar, because RNIB are like much more known than we are outside of our community. And I think it would be good if we could all work together in the same direction.
It's also a matter of infiltrating. I mean, the RNIB is much more known outside, but it's also for geeks, it has this like, oh my God, these are the guys that are going to tell us we have to check these boxes or our website is inaccessible. So it goes from both sides. It's basically we have to go out there to the main market, but we also have to go to the technical innovators out there and actually listen to them. The amount of times I heard people say wikis are bad because they're not screen reader accessible annoys me to no end, because within 15 minutes on a wiki I can collaborate an idea with people that work on in the wiki way. And Arthur, for example, works in Yahoo, and all our documentation is on wikis, and it's not really that much of a problem. So it's the same way a lot of developers say, this, I have to use JavaScript, I don't have to care about that accessibility. I think it's time for the accessibility world to actually realize that we've come across differently now, that the world has moved on, and that we should use the technology that the geeks use, or basically understand it to reach them. Because it's easy to shut down Facebook and say like, it's a really bad website, but as I said, if they don't know what's wrong, because nobody on their level talks to them that way, then they will just shut up every time you say, hey, accessibility, and you're like, no, we got a new ad platform coming out that brings us so and so many millions, that's more important.
Yeah, I think the same, it's a way to talk on the same level, and I think the one problem is that how to explain someone who's not technically savvy how to use all the options they have, and on the other hand, how it's possible to tell technical people that are doing the stuff how things could be done and why they should be done that way, and to talk the same language. And I think these are two ways of problems where to meet the same language and to discuss problems and to find solutions. And I think it's not that easy, because to find someone who has a learning disability, and to explain exactly what's going wrong and to put the right question. I think that in the movie or in the film, that was very interesting to see how the question was put to get out the information, what's really getting wrong and what she really wants to have. And I think that's a two-way problem, I think.
I found myself nodding along with Jonathan earlier in terms of personalisation, and it also kind of occurred to me that actually BBC at the moment is bringing personalisation to the masses in terms of the homepage. I've noticed a lot more kind of regular people accepting that now. And if we did, as an article group of people, managed to get something that was really easy to use, maybe combined with OpenID, where people could set up easily some personalizations that sites could then understand and adapt the content from people. Kind of a cheaper request might be to, if the BBC could switch their homepage for a day to one of these adaptations, just so that everyone knew about it. Because I notice, just talking to regular users, a lot of people have actual problems seeing the screen, just in visual terms, a lean forward, have low resolution. But don't really make any adaptations. If they knew about these simple things that they could do to make it easier, and it was common knowledge, I think that would go a long way towards solving it.
Much like a non-inbred CSS naked day.
Do you want me to respond to that?
Well, is that something you could do?
I'm guessing that's
what
trying to get something onto the BBC homepage is just an absolute nightmare. Because if you can imagine an organisation with, I don't know how many people working for it, it's, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands, all of whom want to promote their whatever they've been doing via that space. To take it over for a day, 9/11, 7/7, these things didn't take over the BBC homepage for a day, not all of it at least. So whilst I totally, utterly applaud that and feel slightly humbled by, I guess, the idea that we have that much power in the homepage that we wield, I'm not quite sure how I make that happen. What I would say is, yeah, Kat, you got something to say?
Yeah, got an idea.
Maybe on the back.
Yeah, back in the fag packet. There's also people like you lot, Yahoo and all that. What about if we could have some advertising space? You know, why can't we use all those distracting banner adverts and sponsored links for some good? You know what I mean? What about some public entertainment infomercials? We go along, we tell that John Hicks, you need to give us a bit of time because it's got to look sexy. We don't want anything that looks rubbish. Got to look sexy, be attractive, you know. Why give us some advert space? No, it's not going to cost that much, is it? It's going to lose a little bit of revenue, but that's how we get to people. No, all of a sudden, wow, something I actually wanted to look at. Fantastic.
Okay. The little bit of money one ad on the Yahoo homepage gets a day, I would like to have. it's quite interesting, though. Like when you use Google Ads, for example, and also Yahoo Ads in the US, and you don't have any advertisers for the keywords that you have, what they will show is public service ads, like Hurricane Katrina, these kind of things. So that would be a way to get that in as well, but I don't think we're going to get that out there. And technically, I think I'd rather see us build good products that change the internet rather than just piggybacking on the stuff that makes that code.
No, what I meant though, Christine, is we're getting the solutions together, but the people who need them don't know about them. And that's what I was saying, because we need to find a way of getting to the people, because that's what we're not doing. When people come into the labs, the users, they don't know about WebVision, they don't even know about Firefox and things like that. So it's how do we get to people? It becomes a thing about communication, not like you guys, like you're fantastic, you can geek away and it's brilliant, but we've got to tell people that it's out there. There's no point putting it on the AbilityNet website. I mean, you know, sorry, I love my organisation I work for, but you're not going to go there on a Saturday night, and if you're 15 and all your mates are stood around you and, you know, you don't want to look different, you're not going to go to that. It needs to be in the mainstream things that people are looking at.
It's sometimes interesting. For example, we just started last year and they're coming up more and more. You know, we have these avatars in the whole Yahoo world where basically you're your little comic character, and now we have disabled ones as well. We've got wheelchair ones and people with and avatars with guide dogs. And actually the feedback that we got for that was great. People loved it. They're like, hey, it's true, those guys are on the web as well, and that you can link to promotional sites that talk about the different problems. The backlash of that is every time somebody like the BBC or Yahoo does something like that and it's not 100% according to WCAG guidelines, we get shot down in flames by the people that we're trying to support.
WCAG, schmackag.
Sorry, is that... Can you
take that off the tape here, please?
So we got Phil with a question. I don't know if we got the time.
One of the ideas about machinations, the thing I failed to demonstrate due to lack of connection, was that it doesn't have to be about accessibility. It could be for, well, depends if you want to call it accessibility, but it could be for an iPhone, for example. You'd have a machination mod for people who use an iPhone or different devices or whatever it be. And part of the strategy thinking behind that was that that is mainstream. Hopefully it will have a mainstream appeal, and so people will go to that technology, go to that site, go to, the, you know, go to these places, and then maybe think, oh well, you know, tell my friends about it because they have iPhones as well or whatever it be, and you know, from that you start spreading the word about accessibility within the mainstream by basically just saying, well, modding is a cool thing, mashing is a thing we all like, you know, and there are accessible mods and there are mods that just make your phone work better.
Get a hype and piggyback on it. That's mainly it. When I went to companies and talked to them about screen reader access, keyboard access, that I'm in, when I got my mobile phone out and showed to them, like, look, this skip link makes sense on this mobile device a lot as well, and this morning I could get my ticket that way, they went for it. It's like, if an accessibility extension is only for a disability, it's so hard to sell. If everybody else actually benefits from it, through SEO, for example, then it's so much easier to sell to people, and that's what it should be. The speaker is a disability device. If somebody was hard of hearing, had the speaker invented for them, the remote control is a disability device. And all of these things are so much in the mainstream right now, and we need to get our solutions in the same way out there.
Exactly. Yeah, I think the computer science, it's basically called situated disability. And I think we are getting more and more where we are using the internet and devices in a way that where we have situations where we have a situated disability. So thinking about driving a car, your hands are tied to the use of the car. You should look onto the screen, onto the street, and not on the screen. So basically, you can't use your hand. You have a mobility disability in that situation. You have a visual disability because you can't look properly on the screen. So such situations are getting more and more common, and I think that's why such things are coming more and more. So the new iPod was promoted with. Now with reading your menus on your iPod and reading the group or the music band is playing and the genre and such things, because you are using your iPod Shuffle when you are doing jogging and such things, but it's basically a situated disability because you can't look on your iPod while you are running and so on. You want to listen to what's happening on the iPod. And the same things, we have to think through which situation we have where the disability is due to a situation a person gets through. And as more devices are used more spreadly, the situation occurs more often. So, for example, wireless LAN, you will use your laptop outside in the sun. And there, you need a higher contrast for being able to see the things on the screen. So such situation is getting more and more, and that's why accessibility is getting more and more into the mainstream, because it's affects more and more people.
Just the other thing, I mean, no one's actually mentioned the aging population. I think it's worth doing that. Alan Newell is a professor up in Dundee. He's a great guy, and he does loads of. I mean, his thing is that he's getting on in years himself, and actually a lot of people who are aging are finding that they have all sorts of combinations of minor. They wouldn't call them disabilities, but certainly impairments. And I mean, that's the thing. We're talking about needs here. All of this is about. In you know myself in a particular social situation, what are my abilities, and what do I need to do? So a lot of aging people, you know, Alan uses stats that should really really make a difference financially. That you know most of the wealth now is in people who are 60 plus. And yet most of them aren't using the internet or whatever. Why? Well, because the internet is just not working for their needs. Actually, they can't see the point half the time as well, because the type of products that we're creating are not necessarily ones they would have. We asked him about interactive TV, which is obviously one of the things we do at the BBC. You know, you can get all this information on the TV, you know, that, you know, but people aren't using it. Why? And he said, well, they don't want that information on the TV, actually. They don't want information, they want connection. If you gave them a webcam on top of the TV and, you know, so they were able to watch the TV with their friends, you know, half of the screen, you know, their friend watching it on their side and having a discussion with them whilst you both watch Coronation Street or whatever, then most people would buy it. So, you know, part of the time it could be the product as well, and we're just missing, we're missing a huge market out there. I know that's why Microsoft are interested in all of these, the ease of access center and things like that. Microsoft are really open about saying that, you know, the market is not just people with disabilities, but it's actually everybody in the room about kind of like 40 years from now or whatever. The problem is that whilst I'm looking around the room, we're still probably sort of skewing young rather than older. So, you know, it's young people making things that old people can't use, which is what old people are telling us. And so we're trying to do a lot more research in this area. But that isn't sexy to other young people who hold the checkbooks. So we just got to get over that barrier to say, okay, if you actually did this, maybe it wouldn't win you loads of awards as the sexiest, you know, sort of like web products in the world. However, you may get a massive audience. If you look at the Saga sort of social networking sites, I think, I'd love to have more examples of that. It's always the Saga social networking site that I use when I say this sort of thing. And there should be at least about 10 that I can choose from.
I love the pragmatism they've done in Dundee as well. So they have these computers in the university and they have a pension home next door. And they basically just told them, like, hey, free internet, try it out. And have, like, students sit next to them and see how people and where they get stuck in these kind of things. And it doesn't cost much. They have a wireless hotspot set up in, like, 5 computers nowadays. And it was really, really interesting seeing how that works. So yeah, the Asian thing is definitely also, you realize how it changes, but there's a lot of embarrassment going on there as well. Because, like, I don't want to be the old guy, you know, the first kid that stands up in a tube for me gets punched. And it's really tricky to convey to people that is already the fact. The same way people say, oh, I got no disability. I take my glasses off, I can't see half of you anymore, and that's a disability. And I realize it every morning when I try to find them. It's just a matter of that we get the barrier, like the disability. Maybe also always seeing an icon of a wheelchair user when we have disabled access is not too helpful.
I think that's actually a very good point, because one of the things that I've been very aware of through personal experience and through the experience of others is nobody likes to think of themselves as disabled. Nobody, I mean, yes, we can put an accessibility help page there, put a link that says accessibility page. I would bet money that half the people that would benefit from that information won't click on it, because they just don't think that it applies to them. Whether you've got an icon of a wheelchair or not, for me, I'm the kind of person, somebody, you know, sticks an icon of a wheelchair on, even if I happen to, you know, be going through a particularly bad patch and I'm in a wheelchair at the time, I don't want to use that because I want to use what everybody else is using. And a lot of the time, the trouble isn't necessarily with the stuff that's raised, it's how it's integrated. I was talking to somebody earlier on and talking about how integration of things for disabled people can be done in such a way that people just don't notice, it just works. And there's not enough of this, it just works, going on. The example I gave was I used to work in King's Cross, quite near the Brunswick Centre, which is just at Russell Square. And they've got, it's on a kind of hill on one side, so you've got, one side is completely flat and the other side there's lots of stairs. And at the far end, what they've got is a staircase. What it took me 9 months to actually realise is that they have a staircase with a ramp built into it. And I only figured it out because I was doing a search on Flickr for photographs of really good integrated built environment accessibility, and I saw a photograph of a university in Chicago that has a staircase with a ramp built into it. And I suddenly thought, my God, the next day as I was walking home, I was going through the Brunswick Centre, I was like, wow, there's no go here for the wheelchair bit, or you know, you have to go, you know, half a mile in your wheelchair till you get to the bit with the lift, which is in a bit where, you know, nobody else really knows about it. But it just worked, and people were walking up the stairs perfectly happily, and people with pushchairs and wheelchairs or in crutches or whatever were walking up the ramp if they felt like walking up the ramp, or they were doing a mixture of both if that's what they were available for. But it wasn't split into this is what you need for your disability. It was just there, so nobody needed to feel embarrassed if they had to use the ramp. People who were walking with somebody in a wheelchair, somebody with a pushchair, could walk with them up the ramp. It enabled people to be together, and I think it's not just providing the solution, it's how you integrate the solution with the stuff that you're expecting the majority of your audience to use, and just allowing that difference to feel inclusive rather than, you know, there was a horrible phrase that was used a few years back when talking about access-only versions, which was a special shed for wheelchair users, and that's always stuck in my head because it's such a horrible thing. Like, you know, if you go to a concert, you want to sit in the audience, you want to be in amongst the audience. Yes, they've got an area for wheelchair people, but nobody wants to go up onto the special wheelchair platform because everybody looks up and goes, wow, there's all the people in wheelchairs. You know, usually it's a lot less polite than that, but you don't want to stand out like that. You don't want to be the focus. You just want to be there and enjoy the music.
Don't feed them, yeah.
So. Yeah. And I guess, I mean, so that's where I think the personalisation thing, because Web 2 seems to be all about personalisation in a lot of cases, I think the rest of the web is actually playing into our hands. You know, our homepage has customization on it for everybody. You can say what colour you want it, in the same way that you could say, you know, what colour sort of you want your phone or your iBook or whatever. So yeah, I would hope that's easier now than it used to be.
It actually goes further. Most of the real geek world right now, I mean, Yahoo now announced it last week, so I can finally talk about it. We're going to open up our whole site that you can run your applications inside Yahoo sites. You can change Yahoo Mail to what you need by putting applications and other content in there that you want to have there. Because most companies, big companies, realize there's just no way we can provide people with information that they want because we don't know what they want. We just rather open up to other opportunities to not only change the colors and change the font setting, but also change the content. So we have a base content that we provide, and you can click away what you don't want and get extra things to it. And that's where the web is going. We're not going from portal here, all of them actually competing with each other. We're going through networks, frameworks, the one where you pick the spot from the BBC, the news from Yahoo, and your personal email and friends alerts next to it. And this is where the web is going, because we realize, like, it's just too much money to maintain these big sites, that in the end, we have to spend too much money on user research to find out what people really want.
I think one of the problems, what I even realize more today, is like the massive differences of all diverseness of all the disabilities out there. And there's Phil mentioned before, and he mentioned before, like, just within the field of dyslexia, you have, like, already all those massive differences. So it's like you find one solution which works for one group of people and it doesn't work for another group of people. So I find that very difficult to manage. And then on top of that, there's obviously business interests coming in that, oh, that needs to be branded that way, that needs to be branded that way. And so I find that very quite overwhelming as a developer. Like, how do I make all of those things fit? And I have a deadline.
But I think I can answer it with an example of the real world, the hardware world, where there's the same fight for accessibility by disabled groups, and one of them was getting low-floor buses. But if you're looking at the low-floor buses that are running in London, how many baby pushchairs are there inside? And before fighting for the low-floor buses, there were no group asking for making buses accessible for baby pushchairs. And I think it would be very hard if at the moment every bus would change back to the Routemaster, where all this baby pushchair would go. if you're looking at the moment, how they are used at the moment. For example, my girlfriend is a wheelchair user, and she's got really hard to get into the buses because there are so many baby pushchairs inside. And I think this way should be the way we would do it in the web as well. We should do it for making it accessible, but having in mind that there are a lot of different groups to benefit from these ideas. I think the same thing is with your ideas to make it better readable and having a spell checker and so on. I think there will be a lot of other persons who would benefit from this. If you're thinking about how many people are learning English as a second language and perhaps would like to add comments to the BBC site, but aren't that good in writing English or reading English, and such things would benefit a lot, I think.
Okay.
I was just going to make a point about what you said about, you know, how do you do it all when you've got a deadline and you've got people, you know, pushing it up against you. When I worked at the RNIB, I had a great job. I got to come in and tell people this is what you should do, and then I got to walk away before they actually did it. And, you know, I could give advice, but it wasn't being in the situation. I spent the last 6 months being in that situation. When, you know, somebody says this has got to launch on Thursday, and, you know, it's not entirely built yet, and the design isn't there yet, and, you know, the developers haven't built the back end bit yet, and you just do what you can. I think you've got to do what you can. I think you've got to get what you can in there and iterate. Just keep, every time you get a chance to go back to it and add something to it, try and shove another bit in. Try and figure out what's going to give the most benefit to the widest possible audience, and try and do that where you can. And, you know, it does fall a lot on the developer, especially those who are passionate and those who are bought into it, to kind of put in a lot of extra work and try and be the person that persuades them. But it's worth doing if it's something that you feel passionately about. You know, keep trying, keep pushing. It will be frustrating, it will be, you know, occasionally depressing. But so long as you keep trying, you know, 90% of something is better than 100% of nothing. And if you never ever put the product out there because it's not 100%, then that's a whole bunch of people who aren't getting what they might have been able to get from you. Okay, you might not get everyone, but you're never going to be able to build something that's going to suit absolutely everybody in every situation. So you might as well do your best, get out there and keep trying to improve.
Okay, yeah, to mark it up that Dan said earlier, actually, that's relevant to that. You know, you talked about your ramp and your staircase. Essentially what you're talking about there is it was almost a sort of invisible the way it's been done. It's been built into the architecture. And that's a very good metaphor for what I think we should be doing as developers, is actually at the very initial specification phase, be actually writing all this into our architecture. And then actually, that actually refines the way you do things for everybody else as well. I'm a hot believer in that, and I think that some of the metaphor you raised there works very well for development work.
So tomorrow,
comment on that generally. Yeah.
Tomorrow we have a day of hackers. To wrap this up, what would each of you love to see people to put together in a day, just if needed as a proof of concept, but just get it out there on the ground? Like, we have the people here now, they heard about from all of you what the problems are. Tomorrow I want to whip them into shape to get these problems out of the way and get something nice out of it. What would you like to have tackled? Each one of you, one thing.
I'm desperately trying to fight the devils of naughtiness, so all kinds of things that I'm
thinking
of. I'm already in enough trouble. Can I just say, first of all, I love the workout guidelines. I can't wait to get home this evening to look at the AbilityNet website again. I think the thing that really came across from the people we talked to is the scrolling business and trying to make everything fit into one page. I think we all seem to be moving towards, like, can we have really simple personalisation, and can we have it in a way that people can easily get to? So I think that from my gang at AbilityNet, it'd certainly be that. I'm not going to say anything naughty.
We're going to the pub, you can be as naughty as you want to be there.
Can you expand a bit more on the scrolling the one page thing? So that we understand
that a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't quite get that. So, earlier when I was showing the videos.
She wasn't here.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Yeah. There's. Yeah, it's basically that did some research for people that some. Users with different needs from the either from the AbilityNet team or the testers that we work with, and basically people came back saying, well, you can look at the presentation, but just to summarise it, people with RSI find it really difficult to navigate because of tabbing or using voice recognition, so having everything on one screen is really useful. People who use Zoom text can get develop RSI because of excessive scrolling and losing things on the screen. So simplification, having everything on one screen would be really good for them. And then users came back with things like interface. Constantly what we hear is interfaces are too cluttered. Information architecture is getting in the way of information. Basically that users don't really like the new Facebook, and also people find web-based email difficult as well. Oh, and we want our accessible Flash player.
I would like to see some really new innovations for making things more accessible. And
you're not going into too much detail there. You know?
But I think the things that the obstacle we have seen today, I think there are solutions there we could use and redo. But the most important thing that I think it would be is to make things that way that it could be reused or used 1,000 times or a lot of more. So that the deadline can be managed only by reusing code that's already there. And a little bit like one reason why I came to London, or it's the everywhere I have traffic light that tells me when it's green. And it's a small cone underneath the button box that is spinning when it's green, and it's everywhere. And I can go through whole London and find my way. It's a very simple, cheap solution, and it's used everywhere, and it's a part of every traffic light. And such solutions that could be part of any web page and are very cheap to reuse, such things would be very great. So I'm really looking forward to for tomorrow.
I'd like the moon on a stick.
And ponies.
Anyway, seriously though, the thing that I would like to most see is the people who are really clever and have these fantastic ideas. Having listened to people today, going away, thinking about the needs of the users when they're making the solutions. I hold my hand up, I occasionally sort of get caught and sort of go, oh, shiny. And I get so caught up in the shiny that I forget about, you know, other stuff. There's a lot of really, really clever people here. I really firmly believe that there could be some fantastic stuff coming out tomorrow. But, you know, so long as you keep thinking about the people that you're trying to help, even if you try and just do one thing that helps one group of people, but it works really, really well, don't try and, you know, be all things to everybody, but, you know, just keep the users in mind when you're building whatever it is you're building.
I'm just racking my brains a lot, really, because I guess my real answer is that I want something that brings it all together, and that's a bit difficult to do in a day. But I, of all of the things today, I like Phil's modding thing. So I'd be really interested. I'd like to see some of those mods. If people want to sort of use whatever tool it is, if they can take a site which at the moment is just not working for any of the audiences that we've talked about, and if they can make make a mod of it that that is a better version, then that's the type of thing, you know, things like the old rail timetables and the Odeon site, are people are aware of those when these were kind of sites that were just not very accessible. And someone just went along and said, okay, let's scrape all the data off that and bung it into something which is a lot more simple. Say, I think it got them into sort of the kind of legal troubles or whatever. But the train one was fine, and actually they did prove that these things could happen. So I mean, anything where you could just take something that you know that you've had in your mind today, and you thought, gosh, that doesn't work for those people. If there is a way that you can sort of do some sort of mod of that tomorrow, you know, dirty or whatever, really don't care. Prove that it can be better.
Phil, you had a time statement?
I do, very quickly.
A short one?
A bit of a challenge there. If somebody wants to make a mod, lots of ideas, but one of them, which should be quite challenging, but quite fun, and hopefully quite useful, has been commented on already, in terms of its goal, its conceptual goal, is a means of collapsing a web page. And the tricky part of it is as generic as possible, so any web page, as many web pages as possible, safely, i.e. you're not going to break any web pages. And by that, I mean most well-structured web pages, and let's imagine that Wikipedia is well-structured, and you've got a heading, and then you've got a paragraph of some text telling you roughly what the general gist of the article is, and then you've got a few links. And those links are internal bookmarks within that page. Now, what if you could collapse the rest of that page? And then when you click on those links, you expand the area, the content that those links essentially take you to. And that automatically could simplify the entirety of Wikipedia and an awful lot of other pages. W3C, for example, I find it almost impossible to read. Maybe not. But there you go, there's a challenge. Write it in JavaScript, some JavaScript that simply takes a page and collapses everything that you can, that is essentially pointed to with an internal bookmark, and then rewrites the bookmark itself so as it actually expands that area and zooms to it. Is one idea.
My big wish is for the non-geeks to start advocating the tools that we can use to build these things in 3 minutes more. That people realize there's Firefox out there, that I can use GreaseMonkey to change any website, that it's really easy to write an extension for Firefox, really impossible to write an extension for Internet Explorer. So show people the benefits of what can be done with these things. I'm happy to set up a repository of all the cool shit we build. It's just a matter of, like, we have the tools, we have the technology, it's just not going to the right people, as Kath said. And it's partly up to us to say, like, yeah, this is cool that you've been using Internet Explorer, but let me quickly show you this. And you can get Firefox on a USB stick, for example. You don't even have to install it. And you can show it to people that way. And that's my big wish for the non-geeks here, the geeks we will hurt tomorrow.